You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Happy October and welcome back to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This is episode 26, and today Robbie and I are going to be talking about the 2001 film Hannibal. The cool thing about Hannibal is I've actually got a very well-known prop from this movie and a couple of wardrobe pieces. So make sure you check out our Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook account so you can see pictures of these props and wardrobe. Pretty cool stuff. Now, next time, as we're doing a series of different reviews about movies that I own props and wardrobe from, next time we're going to be talking about Wrong Turn, one of my all-time favorite slasher films. If you haven't seen it, now you're prepared. Sit down and watch it. Not the remake. Make sure you're watching the original and just the first part, because it's produced multiple sequels. Now, next week, we got something really cool on the podcast. We're going to bring in one of the actors that actually played Michael Myers, Brad Lurie. And the guy is amazing. He's done stunts. He's done acting. He's got an incredible career that we're going to talk about. And it's just in time for Halloween. But for today, let's go ahead and start talking about Hannibal with Robbie. Hello, Robbie. Are your lambs still screaming? How are you, Robbie?
Hello, Mark.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on again.
You know, when you talk about the movie Hannibal, of course, everybody brings up the whole brain-eating scene. Oh, sorry. Forgot to say, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen this, we're going to ruin it for you. So make sure you watch it. I don't think, again, most of the movies that we talk about, everybody's already seen it. In case you haven't, pause this podcast, go watch the movie, then come back to us.
But yes,
there's a very famous scene that everybody seems to know about, of course, the brain-eating scene with Clarice's boss, who is a total sexist pig dickhead that you hate. He gets his at the end. But I will say, now, you know me, and of course, I've always had like an attraction for Latinos or Asians. If I was going to be eating brains, if I was into that whole thing, of course, I would look for some type of like ethnicity like Asians or Latinos, you know, because I like Mexican food. So I'd probably, you know, go for that sort of brain on the menu.
So you act like this is common knowledge. How did I not fucking know this shit? Because this is, you know, I actually got to go.
You threaten that every time. You act shocked. But we're on the same wavelength when it comes to horror movies.
It's fucking true.
So, you know, don't even start with all that nonsense.
But, I mean, it's some Mexican brain and a taco, just a little cabeza. I mean, already have, for all we know,
you
know.
My mouth is watering. One of the things that I found out, Robbie, as I was researching this, is actually if you were to eat human brain, there's this disease that you'll get. And it's called prion disease. Very disturbing to read about it. It's got a very high mortality rate if you get it, and it only can be spread by eating already infected tissue, but it's brain tissue.
So but you've done your research already. Everybody, well, I got a red flag.
I'm terminally ill. I ate a Mexican guy's brain, Robbie. I'm confessing it here on the podcast.
And Florida, so that goes hand in hand. Okay.
Probably from Puerto Rico. Probably because it's a high Puerto Rican population here. You know, he might have been. I didn't ask him. I will actually have you know that this little fact was listed on one of my resources about facts and details of the production of Hannibal. It wasn't like something I went and researched. It was actually on the page talking about this movie.
Well, I've heard that with, not specifically brain matter, but I've heard that when it comes to cannibalism, that eating at least raw human meat can cause some issues. Basically, like, I don't want to say it's the same as having a blood transfusion with somebody else's getting the wrong type of, like, blood type in your body, that it starts fucking shit up because it's not supposed to be there. It's not supposed to mix. I've heard that before just with other previous films that I've watched and documentaries and things like that. So the brain matter part, I think you're just fucking with some crazy shit at that point. Like, that's, I don't know. That'd be scary.
So I wonder why, was it Jeffrey Dahmer that ate some of his victims? I wonder why he didn't get any type of disorder or disease from doing that.
I don't quote me on this, but I want to say a portion, or like most of the victims, if not all of them, they were prepared. The items were prepared, as in cooked. I think they were made to be a meal and not necessarily raw. Because okay. I know that for my husband's family, my husband's side of the family that might be listening, I know that we've joked about when my husband was growing up, he has a big hunting family, that they always discussed about when they would go hunting and kill an elk. It was kind of like a rite of passage to take a bite out of the heart of the elk.
No, stop it.
But
I'm going to vomit.
Okay, all right. Let's pretend like you actually get queasy.
you're going to find out. You're going to
So anyways, they said that there was just, when I talked to my husband about it, he would say, you know, it's just a myth, but everybody kind of says that. And I think one of his siblings had at some point, but it was just very like for pretend kind of thing. But at that point, I know that there was a huge concern about getting diseases from eating an animal's heart, because it could have, a lot of animals have issues that they live with throughout their life, worms, diseases, things like that, that you would never know really until you either prepare the meat or whatever.
Biting into a raw heart.
Yeah, and there's shit in the blood. There's all kinds of shit. So, I mean, any way you cut it, you know, pun intended, you have to prepare that shit. You have to cook the hell out of it.
The one about the human brain, the disease I was just telling you about, apparently you cannot cook it out of the tissue.
Oh, like, no way.
Reading this, and I was like, so gross. I mean, I know that there are very sick, deranged people like Hannibal Lecter that would probably go to the extent of eating a human brain or heart or whatever, but all of it just grosses me out. I wanted to let you know that actually there is something that does gross me out, and an episode that's going to be going live, and by the time you hear this, it will have already gone live. But I talked with Officer Melissa, who had retired, and we talked about working in a unit where they had to irrigate a bunch of older inmates' ears. And these guys did not have good hygiene. And it was, oh, I'm going to get sick again. But you can hear me getting sick. They had to irrigate these guys' ears with earwax. And it was huge, like lima bean pieces of wax. And Robbie, seriously, I don't know how. I mean, you could have gotten like a candle out of the amount of wax that came out of a couple of these guys' ears. And I'm like, has this guy heard anything for 15 years? Because there was so much wax, and some of the wax was growing hair.
Oh wow.
But yeah, so there are things that actually do make me very queasy, believe it or not. And that was one. And that, and a stoma. If you've ever heard them belch a stoma, you know, for a colostomy bag, that will make you projectile vomit like Linda Blair in The Exorcist. It's really gross. Really, really gross. So I do have a threshold that I reach, and I'm done. I'm out. I'm done.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So let's talk about something less disgusting. Let's talk about Hannibal Lecter. Hannibal, 2001 novel by Thomas Harris. It was $9 million for the rights to do this film.
Damn.
I guess now there's four parts. I shouldn't say I guess. I know this. So there's Hannibal Rising, Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, Hannibal, not released in that order. If you look at the timeline, it's Hannibal Rising, Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, and then Hannibal. What did you think of Hannibal? What were your initial thoughts?
Of the final film, the fourth installment?
Yes.
I was a little disappointed about Jodie Foster not reprising her role as Clarice Starling. I know she's gay, so I was going to say I'm gay for her, but that would make me straight. Anyway, so I fucking love Jodie Foster, and I think her representation in Silence of the Lambs was unparalleled. And then I think it was Julianne Moore, think that was, yeah, that was her, the redhead.
Yep, took over, yep.
Yeah, she took over, and she did her a good part, I think, just knowing and falling in love with Silence of the Lambs. It was a little bit difficult for me to kind of separate the two actresses, but nonetheless, I think she did a pretty damn good representation of that character. The Southern accent thing kind of was a little buggy. But anyways, I thought it was a great film. I thought it brought a whole new... It gave more depth to Hannibal Lecter as a person, it's hard to call him like a psychopath because he is so fucking intelligent. Mm-hmm. He is so well phrased, well worded. He's so grammatically correct. He is so intelligent with everything that he says. There is purpose and there's thought in everything that goes into everything that he does. So it's hard because whether he just be like a mad genius or whatever you would want to call it, it was almost, I think that's what was scary about it, is throughout his life, throughout these films, I think the last one you finally got to see him, I kind of want to say in action a little bit and see a lot more of, I don't know, just him in his element, and just especially the role at that scene with, of course, again, spoilers by now, you're fucked. So anyways, at the table with, I forgot the boss's name, but the Ray Liotta, the actor.
Uh-huh.
It was such a iconic scene. It was so, I don't know. It sticks in my head, and it will always, no pun intended, it will always be there just for the fact that when he's talking about the frontal lobe and removing it, all of this stuff, I don't know, that whole film was really well done. I'd have to say it's not my favorite.
Let me tell you this, because that is the number one thing that most people say about their disappointment with Hannibal, is the fact that Jodie Foster did not come back to play Clarice Starling, and of course the director changed because Ridley Scott directed Hannibal. In regards to talking about Jodie Foster, why she didn't come back, there is a quote that I found, and she had said, "I had been offered more money than ever in my entire career to make this film. But who cares if it betrays Clarice, who has become like a person to me in the end?" And that's her quote. So she really connected with that. And of course, she got an Academy Award for Silence of the Lambs. Silence of the Lambs got 5 Academy Awards. So for Ridley Scott to come in and take over to do Hannibal, those are some really big shoes to fill. And I think that no matter how amazing of a movie that you create to follow up to Silence of the Lambs, which was like critically acclaimed, everybody knows it, everybody's going to see it, all the critics, with the exception, I think, of, I can't remember if it was Siskel or Ebert, but one of them did not like it. One gave one thumbs up, one gave one thumbs down, and a lot of people trashed him for that because everybody loves Silence of the Lambs. So Hannibal was hard to fill in those shoes for Silence of the Lambs in that series.
The fact that you bring up that quote, it's very much Jodie Foster. I respect that. And that would almost turn me away from, if I were in that position to be offered for the opportunity to take that character and make another film. I don't know if I could or if I would, especially if I were to hear that from Jodie Foster. I think that would make me want to say, you know what, I feel like I would be doing injustice by trying to take this character to the next level or represent this character in another film after it being done, in my opinion, perfectly by Jodie. But then I guess some other actors could say, you know, that's a challenge. Bring it on. I'm going to study. I'm going to, you know, obsess over this role, and I'm going to make it, I'm going to continue this role. Like you just quoted from Jodie, I highly, highly respect her. And that just plays to the same tune where she knew exactly that that role needed to be, at this point, I feel like left alone almost. I don't know if Hannibal brought any official closure. I feel like if it had not been done, I don't know if I would have been wanting more. I know at the end of Silence of the Lambs, you know, she's on the phone and he says, "I'm having a friend over for dinner," or something.
I'm having an old friend for dinner.
That's right. And she's like, "Hannibal, Mr. Lecter.
Dr. Lecter. Dr. Lecter.
Yeah.
Dr. Lecter."
Fuck, I love Jodie Foster. Anyway, so at the end of it, I know that there's a little bit of like, ooh, this is kind of leaving a hanger for another film. I almost, having watched Hannibal, I thought, we probably actually could have left that off. And I would have been very satisfied with last film. But Hannibal being done, I think, was still pretty damn good.
Because there are four parts, and I Googled it really fast, it's a quadrilogy. Final chapter in the Dr. Hannibal Lecter quadrilogy. You know who else was heartbroken about Jodie Foster not coming back to play Clary Starling?
Who?
That would be the man himself, Sir Anthony Hopkins. He was really discouraged. He wanted the director to return, and he wanted Jodie Foster to come back. One report said he was disappointed. One report said he was angry. But depending on how your Google search is and your algorithms, you're going to get different responses. I know that he had wanted her to come back to replay the part. When they had done Silence of the Lambs, Jodie Foster was very intimidated, very scared of Sir Anthony Hopkins. And in between takes, he remained in that glass cell with the plexiglass and the holes. So they did not have a lot of interaction while filming when the camera wasn't rolling, which I thought was fascinating.
Fuck.
Which is cool. But he's such an outstanding, intimidating actor anyways. I don't know if you know this, but there was a movie filmed in Utah called The World's Fastest Indian, and he was in it, Sir Anthony Hopkins, and I was up for a part of a police officer. I had gotten a call back for the producer or the director and didn't get the part. It would have been great because I heard from other people that had worked on the film that when you get to know him, that he tells you to call him Tony. A little bit of interesting.
Wow. I did not know. Oh, do you know what's funny? I've heard of that film. I had no idea it was even related to being filmed in Utah or that you auditioned. That's fucking crazy.
I think that the casting director there in Utah was Jeff Johnson. I think that's who it was for that film. Your buddy, Paul Krindler, who was really kind of overplayed as Clarice Starling's boss, and he's so sexist and so demeaning and just has some terminology that he uses in the script where they just make you hate his guts.
Yep.
He did a great job with it. Now, the reason he got the part is because he went to the same gym as Ridley Scott, and he kept running into him, asking him if he had any parts for him. So that's how he actually got the part of Paul Krindler.
Really?
Yeah, kind of cool. I mean, it makes you think that, like, you know, Hollywood, even though it sounds so big and everything, I guess it's a pretty small town because you have all these different actors and stuff. And years ago, my oldest brother lived out in Los Angeles, and he worked at a video store when those things actually existed. And he would see celebrities all the time, and he would tell me, like, who he'd run into. And he would just name all these different celebrities. And of course, you know, I was just like envious, like, what? What did you say? Like the total for his rentals, like $3. I'm like, did you not talk to him? Like, are you fucking crazy? And he's like, it's like, no, because they're living their life and they don't want to be bothered by some clerk at a video store. So, and, you know, my brother was out busy auditioning for parts and trying to get into the industry, into the business.
The biz.
The biz. Now, the character of Mason Verger, who I did not really know much about, he's the disfigured guy that's obsessed with Hannibal Lecter, that Hannibal Lecter had disfigured at an earlier date.
Yep, during therapy, if I remember correctly, because he was his therapist.
So do you know what his character had done, Mason Verger?
If I remember correctly, wasn't he a child predator? I think he was a he was a sex offender, I believe, but
yeah,
I don't know, was it boys or girls? I couldn't remember that.
I didn't research it that deep. I didn't go in as deep as his character did. No.
Yeah. Me neither.
Gross. That part was actually offered to Christopher Reeve, or he had come up in conversation as possibly playing that part because of the fact that he's wheelchair bound. Then when he found out about the character and that he was a quadriplegic, disfigured, and a child rapist, he said, hard pass, no thank you.
Oh.
I thought that was interesting. Different things that you read online about Gary Oldman, and there's no doubt the guy's an incredible actor. He played in JFK, played Lee Harvey Oswald. He's been in so many different movies, so many different characters. He wanted, again, depending on what source you read online, one of the sources said that he wanted billing credit at the beginning, the opening of the movie, along with Moore and Hopkins, and they told him no. He refused credit. When you ask him about it, he was asked by another news source, and he said that he's unofficially the man of many faces, and he kind of wanted to have fun with it since his character had no face than to have no film credit. Like, let's go ahead and play into this. So that was his response to a different news outlet. So who knows what really happened, but
interesting.
Yeah. That scene in the beginning where he buys the mask, Hannibal Lecter's mask, from Barney, the guy that works at the hospital who sells the mask. The outfit that Gary Oldman is wearing, I've got that costume. That's one of the pieces that I have in the collection. And this whole thing that we're doing different reviews for those people that are listening, we're doing it based on movies that I have some proper wardrobe from. So the first piece that I've got is from Gary Oldman, his wardrobe as Mason Verger when he buys the mask. That's one of the pieces I've got. And then the other piece that I've got is the mechanical head of Ray Liotta when Hannibal Lecter takes off the skull cap, cuts his brain, cooks it, and feeds it to him. That was attached to a mannequin in the chair for certain shots. And then Ray Liotta had a green cap on for scenes where they wanted his actual facial expressions, and then they did their digital magic to put in the brain there. Yeah, those are the two things that I have from Hannibal.
Wow. I was always curious about the scenes with Ray Liotta sitting there with his scalp removed or his the cap gone. So I was wondering, and I guess that makes sense, but at the time I thought, it's really well done, so I wonder if they added some kind of, you know, makeup or something like that. But I guess that makes sense, because I've definitely seen the head at your house, so that is, that's fucking the cool.
If you actually play it in slow motion and break it down scene for scene, you can see where it's actually, I think it was like it was an animal brain inside the fake head that I've got. And I can't remember, was it a lamb, like two lamb's brains put side by side that he actually cuts with the knife? But you can see where it's CGI with Ray Liotta, the green cap that they made to look like a brain, and then it switches back and forth with the mechanical head.
Fuck, I'm going to have to watch that closer next time.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. A lot of interesting stuff. I had no idea when you watch this movie, and I had seen this movie opening day, which was February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2001. And I remember because it's my friend Tracy's birthday. We went to go see it for her birthday. And when I initially saw it, Robbie, I thought the movie was good, but the scene with the brain at the end was like so over the top. Now, why did they do that? Like, that's too much. It's a little over the top, cutting the skull. And then, of course, Crindle is drugged up and then he cuts the brain, then he cooks it. It just seems like it's going a little too far. Now I appreciate it a lot more. But back in the day when I first saw it so long ago, I was like, this is
interesting.
Yeah. You know, I can believe it when Jason rises from the dead 30 times, but cutting a guy's brain, come on, give me a fucking break.
Get it right.
But it grew on me. I love the movie.
I think that really showed, because I think everybody had been kind of wanting to, I don't want to say wanting to see that in particular, but people had been wanting to see him, again, and it's going to sound weird, in his element and like live up to who he was and why he was in this solitary, why he was so scary, why he stood out as a criminal. I think that finally, wow, like, you're right, like, he's a fucking psychopath. Yeah, like, he drugged Clarice right out of the gate. Of course, Paul the boss,
Paul Crimble. Yeah,
he's drugged and he's fucking talking with his head already. Hannibal knows what he's doing and he is enjoying every fucking second. And out of that whole interview between, you know, Clarice sitting at the dinner table and them sitting at the front of the table or at the end of the table, you know, discussing this back and forth, when I first watched it, I thought, this kind of makes sense now. Like, this is not just some guy behind a wall or behind a glass cage. This animal's no longer caged. This is him in his element. That's what made it for me.
As I was researching Sir Anthony Hopkins, talking about Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal, Red Dragon, when he first got the part for Silence of the Lambs, when he heard the title, he thought it was a children's movie. He didn't have any idea what it was. And so he gets this part. One of the things that he tries to do is he tries not to blink because he wants to show the intensity of this character. And I was reading this information. I was like, that is so great. So I go back and I watch all three of these movies. Not so much Hannibal Rising because that's his youth. It's when he was a kid. But I watch these movies. When he's not in custody, he does blink because I was watching in Red Dragon and he's sitting there and he's talking with the FBI agent and they're talking about this person that they're trying to hunt, Will Graham, played by Edward Norton. You know, he's blinking left and right. So I'm like, well, wait a minute. I thought I'd read that his character, but I think that it's just the intensity of not blinking. And he refers to like snakes not blinking just because they're so intimidating.
Oh.
I think that it's like when he's out, when he's not in custody, when he hasn't been captured, he's more relaxed and more at ease. But when he's in custody and he's wearing like the two-piece white outfit, the inmate outfit, or that blue coveralls, that's when he has that intense stare. And that's when he's so fucking scary. And it's just something to think about as you watch those movies. The other thing about that blue jumpsuit, initially they were going to put him like, I think, in an orange one. And I had read, again, the internet, take it or leave it, that he had suggested blue more of a medical aspect, more of the fact that this person is clinically insane. Not a hardcore criminal, but somebody that's lost their mind. I thought that was cool.
That is a very unique detail. It would be interesting to see, you know, I mean, down the road, I mean, probably right now, for all I know, they could probably switch the color and, you know, like superimpose different colors or different outfits for him. But I think that is a very fine detail to kind of, and these little tidbits that you bring to my attention right now, never hearing this before, is impressive, is smart, is definitely the right way to go. Because inmates are either, you know, you could go as classic as pinstripe, or you could go orange, like fucking Hunter Orange. But the fact that it's blue and it kind of gives that medical nod that him with the scalpel in his hand, he's dangerous. Like he is, he's like a fucking deranged doctor that knows, who's very intelligent, knows what the fuck he's doing, and he is scary as shit.
Well, you look at his taste and his knowledge as you look at all the movies, not so much with Silence of the Lambs, but when you look at Red Dragon and you look at Hannibal, his taste is exquisite. When he's in Italy, he has the best of the best. The way he dresses, his knowledge with the arts, when he's talking to the detective in Italy that is on to him, but you just look at like him talking about Italy and making references. The guy is so well read. He's so brilliant. And that really makes him more terrifying. Yes, he is capable of gutting the guy trying to get his thumbprint, the thug on the street, and then gutting the detective and dropping him off the balcony like his ancestor. So all his entrails go spilling out.
Ugh, good scene.
Yeah, it is. But if you had run into him, you'd say, God, this man is brilliant. He must be a college professor. He's a scholar.
He must own a gallery. Something like that, yeah.
Exactly. You know, even when he pulls out, was it Hannibal, where he pulls out the little bit of brain left and he has that little tray and he has like the Beluga, thank you. And so he has this little tray. The guy is just so brilliant. But we all know that this character, even though he can sit with a kid and share a piece of a brain because the kid's curious to what that tastes like. I love the writing. I love the screenplay. They did a great job. As far as Julianne Moore replacing Jodie Foster, I feel for her. She doesn't have the innocence, but of course the character is a little more developed because now she's older and she's not going like through the academy like Jodie Foster's character was. And in the beginning, you have Julianne Moore and she's gets in the confrontation with the DC cop over that shootout where that one lady gets shot and she has the baby. But you have that compassionate side because Clarice Starling quickly makes sure the baby's okay, even though this whole stakeout went to shit.
Yep.
And it starts the chaos of them questioning her abilities as an agent. Yeah, I really love all the different storylines because you've got the Italian police. Clearly, he wants that money. You've got the pedophile, Gary Oldman's character, Verger. wanting revenge, wanting to get even, and wants to feed Hannibal Lecter to those pigs.
Mm-hmm. Oh God.
It's awesome. It's great. I really enjoyed the film. Watching it again, it was like, it was bringing back a lot of memories, and I was like, God, there's so many details I don't remember about that film, but I had to watch all of them because I thought it was great. A couple other things I wanted to tell you about Gary Oldman. He had based Verger's voice on Katharine Hepburn. So if you watch it again, listen to him talking and maybe go and watch like on Golden Pond and see if he did a good job mimicking her voice. Did you see on Golden Pond, or are you familiar with Katharine Hepburn?
I'm sorry, I'm younger. So again, you're going to have to remember that I am not exposed to black and white films.
Okay. 67 years ago, Robbie. So go back and check it out. She's an amazing actress. And we're talking about movies. She's one you
might. Of course I know who she is.
All right. Okay.
I have not seen Golden Pond, to be completely honest. I actually have never seen any of her films, to be completely honest. I'm a bad gay. I've never seen any of her films. So I'm curious now to watch one of them and compare that, because his voice is so unique in the way he talked, the way he delivered. So I'm wondering if it is. So I might have to watch that today.
I remember when I was watching on Golden Pond, I think she talks a lot like this as she got older. If I remember, I got to watch on Golden Pond because it's been years, but she's just an amazing actress. The other thing about Gary Oldman is that his makeup, which is so fucking awesome, that the makeup artist, when you look at his disfigured face, you can see the depth to the flesh. I'm assuming it's silicone-based appliance or appliances that were glued onto his face. That took 5 hours.
Jesus Christ.
And they were based on a fetus, like an undeveloped baby.
So I'm glad you brought this up. So when I first watched the film, his character stood out more than Hannibal. I think I don't know if they wanted to add some kind of backstory or some side story with his, you know, his hunt for Hannibal, and that he wanted revenge and he wanted Hannibal's comeuppance since he disfigured him and basically kind of ruined his life. I don't know if they meant to, but I left the film with his image, his face, his disformity stuck in my head. To this day, I had watched the movie not that long ago, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, it never gets any better. He's still kind of terrifying, and he himself is disfigured. He's very somewhat hard to look at because of it. Him as a person where, again, the way he talks, the uncomfortability you get while watching him and knowing what he's done in his past and what he still does and how he gets away with it and how he's so wealthy that he can get away with it. And I was more focusing on him for the most part. Every time the scene came on, I was like, oh, yeah. I forgot. This is about Hannibal. Like, this is, yeah. Okay. All right. I got to get back on track.
To be fair, he's a bigger piece of shit than Hannibal Lecter.
Yes, that's the thing.
And he's so arrogant. He's clearly very wealthy. He talks down to his staff. He has that one helper, and he talks down to him so condescending. You really end up hating. It was actually a doctor that he's talking to, Cordell. He refers to Cordell this, and has him run and do everything. So I guess Dr. Cordell is full-time staff for Verger. You end up absolutely hating Mason Verger. He's, first of all, he's a pedophile. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting that Hannibal Lecter talked him into cutting his own face off. And that's why he's all disfigured. But, you know, you have a certain amount of sympathy, and you find out in this movie that Hannibal Lecter, one of the guy Barney, you know, they ask him during the movie, it's like, are you ever worried about Hannibal coming after you? It would be below him to go after like the staff. I can't remember exactly how it was termed. He definitely would not mess with somebody. He's going to go after pieces of shit like Paul Kindler or Mason Verger, or, you know, of course, the thugs that end up kidnapping him in DC. Mm-hmm. They drew first blood, or the thug there on the streets of Italy, or the detective that's onto him that's a threat. You know, he's not just killing him for fun, but they're going to get him back in custody. It's survival.
Good shit.
I love it.
Yep.
There was two people. They didn't know if Anthony Hopkins was going to come back and reprise his role as Dr. Hannibal Lecter. So two names that were thrown out there, John Malkovich and Tim Roth, were both considered. So that would have been interesting. John Malkovich, I know, would have had the depth. He would have been great. I don't know that I would have gone and seen the movie, though.
Really?
To find out that Jodie Foster wasn't returning, I'm like, eh, probably the... I went and saw it to see Sir Anthony Hopkins again come back and play Hannibal Lecter. That was the draw. So if he wasn't going to be there, I doubt that I would have ever watched it. Did you know that Red Dragon, that movie, had actually been done years earlier under the name Manhunter? Red Dragon, it's the same storyline as Manhunter, but it was completely different actors, and Manhunter did not do well at the box office.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So if you get a chance, if you're really into this series, you might want to check out Manhunter as to a different artist's interpretation of this story. It did not do very well. Completely different actors.
Damn. I didn't know that.
Yeah. This Hannibal was filmed in 100 locations in DC, Virginia, North Carolina, and Italy.
Fuck. God, that's expensive.
Right. And I love it when a big studio does a movie like Hannibal or Silence of the Lambs, because they get so much money and there's no holds barred. Spend what you need to. You get a director like Ridley Scott. It has a big box office draw. It's going to be in all the theaters. You're going to get the best actors. They're not going to spare any expense. And it's just so much more rewarding. Like The Omen, that was another one. I think that was 20th Century Fox. That was a great movie. Any of the big ones, like Alien, of course, that was a big one.
Yeah.
You know, they just spend tons and tons of money. And a lot of times horror movies are a lot lower budget. So it was great to see that Hannibal was done by a big studio.
Interesting. Well, I mean, if you want to play the authenticity, then yes, absolutely fucking do it. And if you can, why not? Like, let's not do green screen. Let's not do a set. Let's not do a fucking warehouse and make it look like, you know, if you can do it, do it. And for the most part, if you do want that feeling, or as an actor, for somebody to say, pretend this, or you're walking on cobblestones, or it's currently downpouring, you know, on a London street, whatever it may be, to be there and have it being done in real life, and there's no fucking special effects about it, you're really there. I think that's going to show in your performance. Whether you're a great actress or actor or not, I think that it would make it so much easier to fit into a role when you are there. You're immersed in that.
Sure. It's going to be a lot easier as an actor.
Correct.
It's going to be a lot easier. You know, when a movie has a really big impact, when you can go to a city in Italy where they film a movie and there's actually a tour for locations where they filmed the movie. And that is the case with Hannibal. If you go to Italy where they filmed this, there is actually a tour where you can see the different spots. I don't know how dated that material is, but that would be pretty cool to go see, like, where the investigator Pazzi was, I think it's Pazzi, P-A-Z-Z-I, where he was pushed off the balcony. That would be really fun to see where his entrails hit the concrete. I would love to go over to Italy and check all this out. I think that would be amazing.
I mean, that is pretty, that's a real thing, really?
It was. And again, maybe it was just right after the movie came out. But I imagine that, like, certain film locations, like the Stairs of the Exorcist, the Amityville house, of course, the Goonies location, you know, with the rock on the beach and the Goonies house.
Been there. I'm one of those people. Yes, I've been.
No, I think it's cool. Yeah, I want to go see the Poltergeist house. That's definitely on my bucket list, is the Poltergeist. I've seen the Elm Street house where Nancy lived, and her boyfriend, Johnny Depp's character, right down the street, is right across the street, like right just a few houses down from Nancy's house, is right there.
That would be fucking awesome. That would be pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it's a lot of people flock there to go see it, and it hasn't changed much. I know the Monroeville Mall from Dawn of the Dead. People go to that every day to go check out to see if they can match shot for shot.
Oh, man, that would be me. God, I'm a nerd.
Fun. No, it's cool. It's cool. This movie was the highest box office gross for a movie with an R rating on opening weekend. 58 million. I'm sure that's probably been broken now. That record was probably good for a while. I doubt that it exists today because there's, well, I don't know, because they've kind of lowered the standard for violence with PG movies.
Yeah.
Did you know Jaws was PG?
When it was released?
Yes. You see that leg floating to the bottom of the ocean and Chrissy's arm on the beach and then Quint getting bit by the shark and blood squirting out. I'm like, this was PG?
Not even 13?
No, no. Well, 13 didn't come out.
Oh, God, at the time. That's right. Okay.
Red Dawn. Red Dawn was like the first movie with a PG-13 rating. The original Red Dawn, not the remake. And you know what was cool, Robbie? Is I had turned 13 when Red Dawn came out. Like, that was... Why are you laughing?
Oh, you're serious.
I'm eating your brain. Great. I am eating your brain. And where is Dr. Lecter's
recipe? I hope
recipe
you get diseases book? Right now.
From you, I probably will get fucking diseases.
Guilty.
All right. That's so gross. Okay. Did you know that Dr. Hannibal Lecter is rated number one villain on the American Film Institute's 100 years, 100 villains list?
Really?
Yeah.
Like, who's in the top five? I have to hear that. Do you know?
I don't care. I just want to care about Hannibal Lecter.
See, I don't know. I'm sure that there has to be.
I'm sure that you're going to have The Exorcist represented. You're going to have Jason. You're probably going to have the shark from Jaws, the Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz. You're going to have the whole list of all the bad people. Number one is Hannibal Lecter.
Wow.
You know, if you look at it, he's been in four movies now. They've put out four different films, you know, where he is the character that everybody is drawn to.
Hmm.
Yeah. Love me some Hannibal Lecter. Love
apparently
it. Apparently.
Jesus.
Let's real briefly just talk about Red Dragon. Your thoughts?
The butt scene. Yeah. Yeah. When you first see his tattoo.
Mr. Dollar Hyde drives the van. You're talking about him with the actual dragon on his back?
Yes, yes.
That's funny. That's funny. Watching that scene in the beginning where Will Graham goes back to Dr. Lecter to say, like, how could we have overlooked this? He's eating his victims. Anthony Hopkins is like, I feel like I failed you.
Yes.
And then he's walking around Hannibal Lecter's office. He opens up the cookbook. And he sees, like, sweet rolls. And he realizes that's a recipe.
It was that fucking moment and then chinked.
God damn!
Scott!
Fuck, it's so good! God, I really love that scene.
Apparently. Simmer down now.
Jesus. Yeah, I know, right? I get really excited about this stuff. You know, Red Dragon, Hannibal, and porn, you know, on Pornhub. I mean, all of it really gets me excited, Robbie.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. Are you saying that we're out of time?
Oh, shoot.
Oh, look at that. I totally lost track of time. It's been wonderful talking to you, you psychopath, right?
And on that note, no, that scene, that for one, you know already, of course, but you're wondering when it's going to click. And I remember watching it and thinking, is Will Graham, is he just baiting him? Is he... I know it sounds ridiculous, but I was almost like, are you fucking stupid? There was a part where I was thinking, is him? Like, you, Hannibal, did such a good job when it came to kind of like, oh, really? Oh, well, you know, according to this and according to that, and just kind of not showing any kind of fear, not showing any kind of nervousness or any anything.
He's a pro.
Yes, like he's a pro. Again, a mastermind at what he does. So
he's a manipulating motherfucker. He's really good at it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's well said.
I feel like I've failed you, Will. And he's like, oh, no, Dr. Lecter. No, it's cool. You know, it's fine. It's just oversight. And I, you know, who am I to question you? I love the dialogue, the back and forth. It is so natural. Dr. Lecter is so fucking intimidating. I mean, working 20 years in a prison, do not turn your back on that motherfucker. And Silence of the Lambs, when they go into that cell and they're sloppy, those two cops.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it. That was so well executed.
you fucking newbies. You didn't.
Well, they're not, though. I know.
Yeah.
They were older then than I am now. And that's really old. I know what you're thinking. I can hear your brain on the other end of this phone, you motherfucker. You're like, no, they weren't that old, were they, Mark? You son of a bitch.
Yes.
Back to Hannibal, because that's kind of the focus of today. To kind of summarize the storyline, you got Clarice Starling. Hannibal's over in Europe. You've got Gary Oldman's character, a child rapist, nice guy. He wants revenge. There's all sorts of money. God, the estate that Gary Oldman, I wonder where he gets his money from. I haven't read the book, Hannibal, so I don't know. Did you read the book,
No,
Bobby?
I don't know how to read. I honestly kind of assumed it was from, well, if I remember correctly, like he was born into a wealthy family, if I remember correctly, but also he had some kind of organization, which is why he got away with, I know it's going to sound terrible to say, but having kids at his disposal. Didn't he run an organization or something? And it was like the money was coming in from people who thought he was doing fucking good. That he was like,
I don't know.
I haven't seen it for a bit. It's literally been a couple of years. I swear that's where the money came from, is that he was like a, not really a philanthropist, but something along those lines where he was running an organization and getting money that way. But in reality, he was a fucking pervert and he was a shady motherfucker. But the only thing that made you
so
not
arrogant.
Yeah, the only thing that made you, I don't want to say tolerate him, is that he wanted revenge. He wanted Lecter dead. He wanted his comeuppance. And that was the only thing that was like, okay, I'll give you 5 minutes to like spiel because you're a fucking terrible, terrible human being. You kind of got what you deserved. You know, Hannibal's still a psychopath. You're a psychopath. It was an odd play when they, of course, introduced his character, but it made you wonder how. These people know. These people that work for him know. It was a very odd thing. It was an odd character. It was a odd setting. It was kind of fucked, the whole thing.
It's sad, though, because what you're saying about, like, the people that work for somebody and they know they're doing criminal activity or something as sick as having sex with children, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. It's like, okay, if I turn this guy in, I'm doing the morally right thing, but now I'm out of a job.
Yep.
And unfortunately, a lot of society operates like that, and it's sick, and it's wrong. People look the other way because it could impact their own life, and it's like that's not the right reason to not report it. Did you know that in the book, Clarice and Hannibal end up having a relationship?
Bullshit.
No, that is absolutely true, and they said that that's not going to work, you know, not for the screenplay.
Well, how the fuck does they get away with it in the book?
Again, I didn't read the book. I'm just saying that's one of the things that they altered from the book to the movie is the relationship between Clarice. If you look at Jodie Foster as an FBI agent, and you can tell, like, she's letter of the law. She's intense, and she cannot be corrupted. Not saying that Julianne Moore playing the same character, because she was even more intense. I shouldn't say more intense, but as I was saying earlier, Julianne Moore was more of a seasoned cop by the time that Hannibal happens, whereas in Silence of the Lambs, she's still in training. But anyways, she fell for Hannibal. So that's a hard one to swallow, huh?
I'm trying to, the only way I could see this is, fuck, I don't know. She's extremely intelligent as an agent. And he's just, you know, intelligent himself as a psychopath. but I can see that there's a weird, like, I am attracted to you. Oh, my God. I was just going to say attracted to you for your brain. I am.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, she is definitely, she's aware. And I don't know if you remember from Silence of the Lambs, but her boss at the academy says, don't let him get inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's brilliant. He's very, very smart. Again, I probably should just have to sit down and read the book because clearly there's going to be a lot more information there always is between a book and a movie.
Well, but fucking way, A. I might have to, too.
Yeah. With those two people that played Clarice Starling, I just don't see either one of them falling for Hannibal Lecter. The screenplay is so much different than the book. But that was really shocking, though, to read that. I'm like, how would that have been portrayed? People would have been mad.
To be honest, now that I'm thinking about it, in Silence of the Lambs, when she's interviewing him and kind of questioning him when he's in his cell, there is, I think they're both trying to read each other, and he's intrigued by her. He sees not just some, not like a dumb broad or some just kind of agent. He sees the good in her. He sees that she's fucking strong, that she's strong-willed. She's determined as fuck. She has a lot to prove. And maybe it was just the way that, you know, Anthony Hopkins didn't fucking blink. But the way he's almost reading her, and he's so intrigued and kind of, I don't want to go as far as saying turned on, but intrigued. He is very fascinated with her. And not in a murderous intent, but almost in a, if I got you alone, it wouldn't be super intimate. It would be more like a, I hate to say dissect, but it's almost like he would want to be like, who are you? Normally, I deal with the rough and tumble cop, the agents, the police force people, all of the law enforcement. But there's something different about her and her sincerity, her intelligence. I'm sure is a turn on for him as well.
He knows it's like Play-Doh because she's young and naive to the criminal world. The only reason he talks to her is because of what you're saying and the fact that he could get inside her head. Because, you know, when he asked her, like, are your lambs still screaming, and knows the story about the farm and her trying to save the lamb, you know, and running with the one little lamb she was trying to save and how it haunts her.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
He interviews with her, but, you know, it's like, it's quid pro quo. You give me some information about you so I can get inside your head and I'll give you information for this guy that you're trying to find.
At the very beginning, yep, that's right.
So I'm going to read you some spoiler information here. I'm going to read it right offline. In the novel's ending, Clarice Starling joins Dr. Hannibal Lecter in dining on Paul Krindler's brain and accepts his desire for them to become lovers. The novel also reveals that Lithuanian Hannibal's cannibalism stems from his childhood trauma of seeing his sister murdered and eaten by starving Nazis. Producer and director Sir Ridley Scott admitted that he didn't like the psychological explanation of Hannibal's actions and rejected it from the script. Hannibal's childhood experience became the basis for Hannibal Rising. Did I lose you? Did you just die, or what's going on?
No.
Is Hannibal there? Just tap twice if Hannibal's behind you. Ah, Robbie, your brain is going to be delicious.
I can't see that. So you're right. After that little excerpt about the whole dining on her boss's brain, Paul's brain, I can't see that. That, I feel like that's a rush job. That's a shit. Nobody come after me. God, sorry. I feel like that's shit writing to kind of write it off that quickly. I don't like that. And maybe I'm the person that's like, I'm just going based off the screenplay. I'm going off the film, and the film was perfect. You can't do any wrong. If I read it, which I probably should, because now I'm pretty damn intrigued. If I read it and it plays well, then okay. But as of right now, it's almost like, and they fell in love and happily ever after. No, there's no fucking way. And she's not, again, in my head, I'm portraying the only person that is Clarice is Jodie Foster. And she can do no wrong. So she cannot dine on brains. She cannot be okay with this mental state of mind.
Dr.
She cannot give
Dr.
in.
Dr. Lecter. Dr. Lecter.
God, I need that ringtone. She's not that kind of person. She's not that kind of agent. She's not that kind of human being. She knows that he is wrong, that he is super disturbed, and she would never, ever give in to that. I know Jodie Foster personally. Fuck,
she's probably vegan, you know? I mean, she's so brilliant.
From that film, probably now, yeah.
Right. I was saying earlier is that Paul Krindler's brain was made of two sheep's brains put together. A brain surgeon was on set through the scene to help with accuracy.
Okay, that's weird to me because that is pretty fucking, that's ballsy, especially for Hollywood. I feel like you would want to tiptoe around PETA. You'd want to tiptoe around all kinds of fucking shit. And you're going to go with sheep's brain?
You know, I tell you what, all the years that I worked in the prison in Utah, and I tell you, a sheep's brain is going to be more intelligent than most of the supervisors I work for out there.
Shots fired.
I have somebody somewhere is listening going, that fucking faggot. You know that they're fucking mad. Ray Liotta actually ate dark chicken meat during the brain eating scene. So they weren't eating, it was just there for the visuals. I guess it looked similar to a human brain.
I mean, it's still, for one, he cooked it super fast. So I called bullshit
on
that.
Did he fry it? He fried it, right?
It was literally like a flip it once, flip it twice, it's ready to go. I was like, I know that brains does not cook that quickly.
God, rare.
So yeah, that's blue in the stadium. I don't know. I still drove the point home that he doesn't know what he's eating. He's completely out of his fucking mind. It made that scene that much more disturbing to see him be like, something smells good or whatever he says. And he eats it. And then, of course, he wheels him out of the room. He waves at Clarice as he's wheeling him out of the room. And that whole scene was perfect. It was honestly fucking perfect, in my opinion.
The most disturbing thing for me, Robbie, was when he took the napkin and he threw it on Paul's head, just covering his face, just kind of threw it. He had no other place to put that napkin, and he just threw it on him like, well, he'll be dead soon anyway, so it doesn't matter. God, that was so cruel. But again, like, the audience is going, yay, the guy's a sexist piece of shit. Good. Cook his brain, asshole. Any closing thoughts on Hannibal?
No, nope, I don't think so.
If you have not seen it, definitely check it out. I think it's a great film. I would sit down and I'd watch all four movies so you get the whole storyline. They're all really well done. I enjoyed them all.
So, okay, I got to interject. You've seen Hannibal Rising then?
Oh, yeah.
So upon getting ready for this podcast, truth be told, okay, nobody fucking judge me. I didn't know Hannibal Rising existed until I looked it up and I was like, what? Oh, there's an origin story?
Oh my God.
I know.
Give me the lead guy that plays Hannibal's hot. So I'm taking your gay card. Give it here. I'm burning it.
Okay.
And it's a horror movie. So give me your horror fan.
Do not. It is not
I'm
a horror movie.
I'm shredding that motherfucker.
Suspense thriller. Get the fuck out of here.
You know what? You have failed me for the last time.
Oh God. Shit. Okay. Well, that makes me want to watch it because I was like, oh no. For one, okay. I saw it and I was like, what? And then my second notion was like, oh God, just leave it alone. So what are your thoughts?
It's good. It's a good film. Don't go into it expecting Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, so I'm not going to watch it.
It's a good movie, though. It's good. I think it's great as you understand the character and what happened to him as a child, although I just gave you a spoiler with my trivia. I will tell you this, that the young man that plays Hannibal Lecter, he passed away in a skiing accident in France within the last year. And he's got a very distinct scar on his face. And that was caused by a Doberman pincher attack when he was a child. I think he was 6 years old. And that's why he's got the scar on the side of his face. That's not
shut the hell up. Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever told you, I got bit in the face by a dog when I was roughly four. So I have that scar, which is why I always have that intense, weird smile. Anyways, that was off in left field, but anyways.
Does it really have anything to do with the dog, or you just have a very weird, creepy, intense smile?
That part. So, okay, good. I'm going to watch it then.
Cool. It's a fun show. I'm just telling you, Robbie, go in. Don't have high expectations. I think you'll enjoy it. I don't think it's the greatest movie. The production value, it's really well done. So,
and I'm assuming it has Jodie Foster in it, which is going to be the only reason why I watch it.
I don't want to give you any more spoilers, so I'll let you find out.
And she must be just a baby, a toddler.
She's not even a sperm in this.
So.
Yeah. The next time we do a movie review, so everybody can prepare and watch this movie, is we are going to be talking next time about Wrong Turn. What a great movie that is. We can't say much because we want you to see it. It has gotten a remake in the last couple of years. Or it's a reboot, right? It's not a remake because it's a different story.
It's yes, correct. Okay. I guess there's a difference. Yeah, you're right. Fuck. Yeah, it's a reboot.
So we're gonna have you check that out, and we are going to post pictures of Paul Krindler's mechanical head, Ray Liotta, bless him, because he passed away this year. And then the costume worn by the child rapist in Hannibal, Gary Oldman. And now
Gary Oldman is not a child rapist, everybody. Okay, well, it's his character.
He's the man of many faces. In Hannibal, he plays the face of a pedophile. Did you know I've seen him in person, Robbie? Gary Oldman?
When he was raping you? As a child? Well, I don't understand.
You know, I don't know. I was face down and I was biting the pillow, so it was hard to see. But no, I was an extra in a movie that him and Skeet Ulrich were in Utah County. And so I saw him from a distance. The two of them were throwing a football back and forth. And it was filmed in front of this, like, I think it was a Baptist church.
How hetero. Just kidding. I love football. Where was this at?
That's not the type of ball playing I like. It was a long time ago. It would have been like 2000, 2001.
Oh, so I wouldn't have been born yet. Okay.
No. You love that age. That's your go-to joke, is like the whole age. Age discrimination in the gay community, shocking.
Fuck, calm down. Do not. Gotta put your little violin away. Shit.
Let my people go.
I'm going to murder you. And then eat your brain.
Are your lambs still screaming, Robbie? So everybody, if you're listening to us as we begin to fight like two bitches,
yep,
put this on pause, go watch Wrong Turn, get ready for next time. In the meantime, I'm going to tell you the same thing I tell you every time, and that is to be good. And if you can't be good at it. And if you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Good night, everybody.